Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm joined today by a cartoonist, art director, and community activist. He's the creator of the very first queer African-American superheroes and the author of the comics collection Oops, I Just Catharted, 50 Years of Cathartic Comics. Rupert Kennard, it's a pleasure to have you on Words and Pictures.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm pretty excited.
All right. Well, Rupert, I am holding on to this 280-page book of yours, Oops, I Just Catharted. This represents many, many years of work. And the star of these comics, so to speak, is a character that you've spent half a century drawing ever since your college days.
The Brown Bomber. I have such vivid memories. It was a summer away from college, from Cornell College. And wherever I went, I carried my sketchbooks. And I constantly sketched, I constantly wrote. And I had created a number of superheroes up until that point. But it wasn't until I started drawing this little figure and I added things to it and I took things away from it. And I knew visually I wanted him to be an untraditional superhero. And I ended up coming up with this little figure and I loved drawing him. And I called him the Brown Bomber based on my admiration for the boxer Joe Louis. And his nickname was the Brown Bomber. And somehow I simply thought the Brown Bomber would make a cool name for a superhero. I kept drawing him and drawing him and drawing him. And that was in 1976. And I would say I'm still obsessed with drawing him because every time I'm on the phone or I'm a little distracted, I'm constantly drawing little sketches of him.
And you say in the book that while you were a fan of superheroes growing up, you didn't need the Brown Bomber to be the strongest or the fastest or have any of these amazing powers of reading minds or anything like that. He needed the superpower of being human and being connected to other people.
Well, it's true. There was something within the persona of this character that really just kind of came to me, I would say. I mean, in my mind, being a gay African-American young man at the time, I was fascinated by the idea of superheroes. And I thought within that period of time, if there were kind of a newer character that identified as a fairy, that had the powers of a fairy, people would probably more so see that fairy as a superhero than a fairy. So that was the Brown Bomber. I loved the idea of combining his powers as a fairy and having him looked upon as a superhero. But in my mind, make no mistake about it, even to this day, I think of the Brown Bomber as this unlikely, most powerful superhero of all time, mostly because of his fairy abilities, which he can do anything.
Yes, he can transform into the size of Tinkerbell
right. And
do all sorts of positive or mischievous actions.
But the thing is, my strip ended up being so political that it was almost only when I pulled all the strips together for the book, and it ended up being such a comprehensive collection, and it was really the first time I was able to experience an overview of the entire history of the strip. And it really surprised me that I concentrated so much on the strip, making observations about society and the culture, that the Brown Bomber very rarely used superpowers in the strip. So one of the most unique things about him is that he doesn't necessarily fight a lot of supervillains. He fights everyday smaller villains, like people who park in handicapped parking spaces or people who talk too loudly in movie theaters.
And that's the superhero we need.
It is, right.
Well, you mentioned that that this character came to you while you were at Cornell College in Iowa. And while you were sketching this character privately, you were also working at the college newspaper, the Cornelian, and the editor of the Cornelian asked you to draw a weekly comic for the paper and include the Brown Bomber.
Well, exactly what happened was that I had drawn different illustrations for the paper throughout my years there, mostly my sophomore year, and they wanted an editorial cartoon for the editorial page, and I'm sure they were visualizing a one-panel cartoon that just dealt with different things that were occurring on the campus. I was the one who had decided, okay, I love drawing the Brown Bomber so much. Why don't I incorporate him in that strip? And it wasn't a strip originally. It really was a one-panel cartoon, like so many of the editorial cartoons are. But I felt like I couldn't get the hang of getting across any of my observations in one panel. And so I kind of went kicking and screaming into the four-panel format, mostly because that was so much more work. But I felt like I had more of a field for that form of cartooning than the one-panel cartoons.
So your comic was on the editorial page, kind of like how some papers put Doonesbury on the editorial page, and that gave you a chance to add social commentary to the
Exactly.
comic. And in your senior year at Cornell, you drew a 3-week-long series in which the Brown Bomber came out as gay.
Yeah, that was a milestone, obviously, for me. As the Brown Bomber strip had constantly dealt with issues of disadvantaged people, homosexuality, gender issues, class issues, I realized as a gay man, it was a perfect opportunity for the Brown Bomber to come out as gay. But I didn't think of myself as a hero for doing it because I did it like the last couple of weeks of my senior year. So if there had been any major fallout, I was out of there anyways. So that start at Cornell was just pretty flawless in terms of setting the stage for where the strip ended up going.
Well, you were definitely a trailblazer. I mean, nowadays, the mainstream comics publishers have plenty of queer black superheroes. DC has Thunder and Mr. Terrific. Marvel has Ayo and Anika in Black Panther. But the Brown Bomber was ahead of all of these by decades.
Yeah, it took such a long time for me to realize how unique the strip became and how, what a trailblazer the Brown Bomber was. When I moved to Portland and started doing work for a queer newspaper here back in the early 80s, that gave me the opportunity to have him appear within the pages of another newspaper. And when he first appeared in a newspaper here in Portland, he only appeared in a couple of issues. And then I left that newspaper and started working for Willamette Week, the local weekly alternative paper. And the strip never ran there, but while I was working for Willamette Week, I was approached by two dear friends who wanted to start a queer newspaper that better served the diversity within the community. I left a paper that really wasn't involved in showing all of the different communities within the queer community. They were basically catering to a gay male bar crowd. And so Renee LaChance and Jay Brown decided to create a paper that would really encompass all of the diversity within the queer community. I didn't think they'd be able to compete with the paper that existed, but of course, they ended up becoming the major queer paper in the history of Portland's queer community. And it did well enough to really earn national recognition.
And the Brown Bomber comic was running in Just Out, the newspaper. And it was in Just Out that you debuted the character Diva Touche Flambe. And the Brown Bomber, we know he was sort of an open character. And Diva Touche Flambe was a bit of a foil to the Brown Bomber in some ways. She was more arch, she was more sardonic, and her targets were sort of equal opportunity. They were people inside and outside the community. There was a lot of loving humor that came out of that strip during those days.
Absolutely. The thing I loved, there were so many things I loved about how Diva came about. First of all, with Jess Stout's commitment to diversity, the very first strip that appeared in Jess Stout had the Brown Bomber and Diva because at the time it was more so considered a lesbian gay bi publication. And I really didn't want a comic strip that only focused on the Brown Bomber. And it was really important to me for the Brown Bomber and Diva to be on equal footing. I never ever liked the idea of Diva being referred to as a Brown Bomber sidekick, because there's nothing sidekicky about Diva Touche Flambe. The whole idea is that she's wise beyond any other living human being. She's this entity that had been reincarnated over, thousands and thousands of years. She would come back. And she really was a perfect partner for the Brown Bomber, because the Brown Bomber's persona basically consisted of his being really innocent and awestruck by human behavior. He's more likely to say, "I can't believe that human being did that." Diva is more like, "I can't believe you can't believe they're like that." There's no human behavior that surprises Diva, and that's why she has this perpetual look of nonchalance on her face all the time.
You're a trailblazer in another way, in that you arrived in Portland well ahead of so many other cartoonists that have made the town a sort of a center, a nexus for comics and cartooning. I think John Callahan was just getting his start when you arrived, but you really helped create a community of cartoonists. And you can see this in the book too. You've got all these cards that are wishing you well from cartoonists all over the country.
Yeah, well, I want to get back to John Callahan because that's such an interesting story for me. I met John Callahan after his accident that left him quadriplegic. And we knew we had in common the fact that we were cartoonists. And I remember definitely embracing his sense of humor, which horrified so many people, because his cartoons had so much to do with his being handicapped, or in my, what I refer to as a less abled. And so we would run into one another every once in a while and, talk about cartooning. And he was familiar with Cathartic Comics, and I was familiar with his cartoons. And so in 85, I ended up leaving Portland and moving to the Bay Area. But eventually in 92, I came back to Portland with my partner, Scott Stapley, that I met in the Bay Area. And in 96, I experienced my accident that left me paraplegic. So it was after that, at some point, I ran into John Callahan, and here we are now, both in wheelchairs. It was very surreal in a way. He just looked at me and said, "What happened to you?" And I just almost felt like saying, "Well, we have even more in common now, because I'm paraplegic and he was quadriplegic."
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And today we're talking with cartoonist, art director, and activist Rupert Kinnaird. He's the creator of the very first queer African American superheroes and the author of the comics collection Oops, I Just Catharted, 50 Years of Cathartic Comics. And before we get back to the conversation, I'd like to take a moment to remind our listeners that KBOO is in the home stretch of our Camp KBOO summer membership drive. We hope that you've been enjoying our programming and that you'll take a moment to pledge your support. There are all kinds of ways to join KBOO. On the web, you can visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now let's talk some more with our guest, Rupert Kinnard. Well, you did mention your years living in the Bay Area during the late 80s and early 90s, and a couple of things happened there that were pretty interesting. One of them was you were part of a group show in 92 at the San Francisco Cartoon Art Museum. The show was called Black Ink, an exhibit of African-American cartoonists. And original panels from your strip, from Cathartic Comics, are now in the museum's permanent collection.
Yeah, that's one of those stair steps, one of those steps towards my constantly being in awe of the different occurrences, these different things that happened that I couldn't even imagine happening in the beginning. And it feels like one of the things I'm really thrilled about in terms of the book is that it just brings all of those things together.
Tell us about Out of the Inkwell. That was a Theater Rhinoceros production in San Francisco back in 93 or 94, where the Brown Bomber and Diva Touche Flambe shared the stage with characters from the Doonesbury comic strip.
Well, once again, that was an amazing occurrence because I lived in the Bay Area for 7 years, having moved there from living in Portland for 6 years. So after the 7 years in the Bay Area, me and my partner, Scott, decided to move. I was moving back to Portland, and he was moving to Portland for the first time. And it was like within maybe a year or so or less, I got a call from a playwright in the Bay Area wanting to know if I would allow him to use the Brown Bomber and Diva in this play he was writing. And it was going to be based on his favorite comic strip characters. And of course, I almost fell out of my chair thinking, that is just so cool. And by all means, you know, do whatever you want with the characters if they're going to be on stage. So sure to his word, he pulled it together, and it did include characters from Doonesbury and some of his other favorite strips. And there was the Brown Bomber and Diva on stage. And it turns out that basically what he did was he took the dialogue from the comic strips pretty much verbatim and just staged it on the stage. And so it was really wonderful. But it was years after that, I went to see a film that was directed by Spike Lee called Passing Strange. And I really loved the movie. And at the end of the movie, there were these credits, and I saw this name that looked familiar, but I couldn't place it. And at one point, I came home, and I had on a poster this newspaper clipping that was from Out of the Inkwell, and it was a picture of the actor who played the Brown Bomber, and his name happened to be Coleman Domingo. And today, Coleman Domingo is an African-American openly gay actor who's been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actor in 2023 and 2024. And every chance I get, I want to try to remind him that the Brown Bomber is his greatest role. I don't care who he plays. And in fact, the next role he's going to portray on screen is Michael Jackson's father in the movie Michael.
I remember just back in 2023, the Portland Art Museum hosted the Black Artists of Oregon exhibit, and you had several original drawings on display there. So people got a chance to look at that work and wonder where they could find more of your work.
Well, there were a number of things that happened that really made me more determined to get a collection of cathartic comics out. One was the premiere of the full-length documentary, No Straight Lines. I was one of the five major characters in No Straight Lines, which is a history of queer comics, along with Alison Bechdel and Howard Cruz and Jennifer Camper. And when that documentary came out, there was this interest in the strip. And I was so disappointed that I didn't have anything out in the world. People seeing the documentary for the first time, if they liked Howard Cruz's work or Alison Bechdel's work, they could go on the internet and they could find all of these compilations, but I had nothing. And then the exhibit, The Black Artists of Oregon, when that came out, I was just overwhelmed to be asked to be a part of that exhibit because cartoon art, I don't feel, is really held in such regard that among all of this fine art, you would think to invite a cartoonist. So, once again, people had the opportunity to see a couple of original cartoon strips. And if they at that time had wanted to explore more about where that strip came from, there wasn't really much out there.
Yes, that documentary, No Straight Lines, The Rise of Queer Comics, that is a really celebrated documentary, came out in 2021. That is definitely one place to see your face. Another one is in Portland's Old Town. There's a mural at Northwest Broadway and Cooch Streets called Never Look Away. And your smiling face can be seen between singer and civil rights leader Kathleen Sadot and former Oregon Supreme Court Justice Lynn Nakamoto.
Yeah, I remember being approached with the possibility of my being on a mural in Portland, and I just kind of chuckled. I just tend to have the attitude of, first of all, being really flattered, but then immediately after that, my thought is, how have you been bamboozled? How has someone convinced you that I should be on a mural? But my attitude became, yeah, well, that sounds like that could be cute. Go ahead. I in no way expected the scope of that, no more than I expected the scope of the Black Artists of Oregon exhibit. And I mean, really, even with Oops, I Just Catharted, my initial imagination was that it would be similar to BB and the Diva, the first paperback book. But it really took some of my friends to convince me that the actual story behind the strip, the way it was developed, its journey would be really interesting. And that's when I went from the idea of simply having a collection of comic strips together to making it something more expansive.
Yes, this book is not just a collection of comic strips. It's got a long evolution of your illustration style, of your design work, even your life drawing sketches. And in addition to the comic strip, you run a studio, Roop Group Graphics, and you've worked with a number of theater companies and press organizations, advocacy groups, and nonprofits.
Really, one of the things in my career that I feel the most proud of is the Roop Group Graphics. I really felt like I wanted to be a reflection of the passion that all of these people in my life have for issues of social justice and grassroots organizations and progressive groups. So when I started Roop Group Graphics, the main idea is that I wanted to work with these organizations, create posters and newsletters and just all kinds of material promoting their organizations and their events. And I have a background in graphic design. My goal was to make sure that it was as eye-catching and pleasing to the eye and drawing the eye to it as possible. And it has never been enough to sustain me in terms of a livable wage, because so much of what I did, I would get maybe a stipend, and then the rest of what a graphic designer would have charged for me would be a donation towards the group.
Well, before we go, tell us about the graphic memoir you're working on. I understand it's called the Life Capsule Project.
The Life Capsule Project was born out of my being absolutely bowled over by Howard Cruz's Stuck Rubber Baby, which was semi-autobiographical. And I knew Howard's work as a cartoonist doing cartoon strips. And he spent years working on a graphic novel, which was Stuck Rubber Baby. And when I saw it, I became lightheaded. I thought it was such an amazing piece of work. And then Alison Bechdel came up with Fun Home, and that was highly biographical. And she was someone who had only done strips, comic strips. And I was telling so many people about those books that they were encouraging me to tell my story as a graphic novel. I knew that I just didn't have the kind of tenacity or drive to do that type of book. But I decided that I wanted to maybe use the Brown Bomber and Diva as narrators of my life story as a cartoonist and a graphic designer and as a young man embracing being a gay man and an African American. And so there were just so many things about my journey that I thought would be really something that I really felt compelled to share with people.
All right, the book is Oops, I Just Catharted, 50 Years of Cathartic Comics. And the author is cartoonist, art director, and activist Rupert Kennard. Rupert, it's been a pleasure talking with you today.
Well, it was a joy for me too. You made me think about a lot of things, and I made a lot of revelations just by discussing this. So thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, for our listeners who might be interested in your various projects, how can they find out more?
Facebook probably would be the best place. It's really unfortunate that I've never developed a website. It's only been on my to-do list for the last 15 years. So I'm sure I'm right at the point I will get one created.
Well, we hope that everybody has been enjoying our special programming for KBOO's Camp KBOO Summer Membership Drive. Before we go, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that this community radio station needs your support. To become a member of KBOO or to arrange for a donation of any size, please visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. Or if you prefer, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at wordsandpicture.